Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and the greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 72. And Dave, it's 72 hours, or actually 48 hours, I guess, now at this point, away from Steelers and Jags. And, you know, a quiet week went to a not-so-quiet week, and we had the Le'Veon Bell stuff coming out yesterday, which we'll get to. But much more importantly, and the focus on the game this weekend, is the Steelers' injury situation has changed rather dramatically from when we spoke on Wednesday morning.
Yes, it has. We had a couple of surprises on the injury report on Wednesday. Initially, it looked like probably the only two names we thought we were going to get on that list would be Antonio Brown with the calf and B.J. Finney with a thigh. Well, that sounds like something makes me want to order some KFC there. some thighs and some all we need is
a drumstick.
Yeah, some drumsticks in there. But we got both those guys obviously showed up on the injury report. The good news, Antonio Brown was full on Wednesday. The okay kind of news, B.J. Finney was limited, but lo and behold, we had a couple of new names on there. Artie Burns, who suffered a non-contact knee injury during practice on Wednesday, and also Stephon Tuitt, who hurt his elbow in some form or fashion. And of course, once those names hit, along with the kind of the corresponding reports out there, a lot of Steeler fans, I'm sure we needed a number taker out there at one of the bridges because I'm sure the line started to build up out there. But both players reportedly have since had MRIs. Both players did not practice on Thursday. Both players, however, claimed that they hope to practice on Friday, and as usual, both players are hoping to play on Sunday against the Jaguars. So, we'll see. Obviously, Friday's going to be a big day for them. Now, we did have Javon Hargrave was a surprise on the injury report on Thursday. He showed up as did not practice with a back injury there. So now that's another name to worry about. Now, in the meantime, Antonio Brown practiced fully again on Thursday. Finney went from limited to full. So it looks like those two guys are a go. The three names that we now have to watch on Friday will be Artie Burns, Stephon Tuitt, Javon Hargrave, and I got to be quite honest with you, I would gladly trade a hamburger. What's the old saying?
The old pop hamburger today. I'll pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Yeah, I'll gladly pay you Artie Burns on Tuesday for a Tuitt and a Hargrave on Sunday. Kind of thing. I'm not going to use this to bash Artie Burns, but he's had some few issues this year, and Cameron Sutton's done a few nice things. And with the way I expect this game to play out on Sunday, personally, I would much rather have Hargrave and Tuitt on the field than I would Burns. Now, that's just a bunch of hypotheticals in there that mean absolutely nothing. So, once again, we'll have to see what happens on Friday. And, I would tend to think maybe Tuitt has the better chance of the two to play. Hargrave, who the heck knows, coming up with a back tweak. But hopefully he'll be ready to go. And, obviously on Friday is when the status reports come out as well too, and if the guys are questionable, they really are questionable in Pittsburgh the way Mike Tomlin has run this injury report this year.
Yeah, you know, look, we're guessing, so we'll leave the guessing to a minimum. The only thing that I tell you, you know, say every week, the weekly reminder is the last person to ask about the injury is the player, because Artie Burns was telling everybody on, you know, Wednesday, Thursday morning that he was going to practice on Thursday, and he didn't. So that's not a good sign. If you can't practice on Thursday and three guys didn't practice, you know, going full on Sunday in 72 hours is, you know, that's why, you know, we just grade the injury report based on history and seeing these things. So it's not a good sign, obviously. And, you know, Hargrave coming in with the back. I mean, let's talk about worst case scenario. Stephon Tuitt showed up midweek in an injury report that wasn't reported after a game with a back injury, and he was out for a couple weeks. So, you know, nothing good about this injury report. And we haven't really seen this other than the Tuitt injury. We haven't had a case where guys have been hurt during the course of the season in practice. This is a little bit different. So obviously none of us saw these things happen. The only thing we know is that Artie Burns was a non-contact injury. And when guys go down with non-contact leg injuries, you expect the worst. You know, you expect a Joe Hayden, maybe a Achilles situation. That's what we feared when he went down originally in that Lions game. You see and you hear about guys in practice doing it, and they either pop an Achilles or they blow out their knee, like Teddy Bridgewater did at the Vikings practice a year and a half ago. So, you know, Dave, fingers crossed, but I'll go with the expectation that we won't see any of them. And let's play worst case scenario means most likely Cam Sutton gets the start. And he would be playing on the side that he has less experience on if he plays on the right side, if they were to keep Joe Hayden on the left side. So that would be point one there. I guess he would get the nod over Cody Sensabaugh. I'm not 100% sure about that, but let's say that happens. Hargrave, you know, what do you do all of a sudden? Do you know, is it Dan McCullers who comes in the base defense, or do you do some things a little bit differently and try and get Tyson Alualu on the field and move some guys around? And then obviously the third situation would be, you know, to it, if he's not in, then it's Alualu's taking his spot, and you do go to Dan McCullers, and now maybe you're short a defensive lineman with LT Walton will be in your only backup. So, you know, things get a lot more interesting if you have three guys who can't go on the three of your defensive starters.
Yeah, that's why I definitely said I'd gladly trade Artie Burns to make sure if I can have Hargrave into it. God forbid something like, and you don't have both Tuitt and Hargrave. Well, then A, is there going to be a practice move, a practice squad move? Because, you know, normally the team only goes in with one defensive lineman on the inactive list. You know, I doubt it's I'll put it to you this way. I doubt it's going to come to them having to make a roster move on Saturday. So, but regardless, let's say you don't have Hargrave. Well, remember the whole thing during training camp in the preseason was that LT Walton was getting snaps as a second team nose tackle ahead of Daniel McCullers. So I think you would see a guy like LT Walton get the lion's share of the base snaps and, you know, base 3-4 nose tackle snaps, if you will, over a guy like Tyson Alualu. I would be surprised if that didn't happen. And then that allows you to have Alualu.
Sorry, tell me that again. You think McCullers or who would be inside at the nose?
Walton.
You think he'd get it over McCullers?
Well, yeah, they train, you know, all through training camp and preseason, he was the number two. You know, they worked him extensively, and Danny McCullers has barely sniffed the field this year. You know, I don't think I'm going to take Danny McCullers and put him out there. you're basically your third string nose tackle. I'm not going to put him out there because, look, I mean, on any given week, who do you, you know, you're not dressing McCullers anyway, so you have to have a guy function as a backup nose tackle should Hargrave get hurt during a game, and that guy's been LT Walton.
Well, but he hasn't really taken any snaps at the nose, right? I mean, Hargrave's taken almost exclusively when they play the base, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he has, you know, I don't have my charting up in front of me, but I mean, I think it's obvious he has played some snaps there. So, I mean, he would be the guy, in my opinion. I'd be shocked if he wasn't, to be quite honest with you.
That's a good question. I'll reach out to some of the beat writers just to have them tweet us today, let us know how they line up in base if Hargrave doesn't go. I'll see what they did yesterday. I'm just wondering if against this particular team with this particular style of offense, if the bulk of McCullers isn't something that you'd rather have in the middle of that line, in this situation. It's a good question. Okay. So, yeah, and obviously Alu-Alu would be the first guy. You know, if Hargrave can go and Tuitt can't, he'll be the first guy on the outside.
Right, and, but you suppose that we're not going to have both those guys. So, I would think that the if that indeed happened, that it would be Walton inside and then Alu-Alu on Tuitt's spot on the left side. That makes the most sense to me. And, look, this is a game, too, that I think you're going to have to use your base defense quite a bit because the Jaguars like to run, use Tommy Bohannon out there a lot as a fullback, and they like to run a lot of two tight end sets too. They'd like to go big quite a bit, and I don't see why they would come out in a situation and it really they would be playing more into the Steelers' hands, I think, if they came out with 11 personnel, because not only does that keep the nose tackle off the field, it could potentially allow them to get a linebacker off the field as well, too, if they wanted to go dime or something along those situations there. So I think you will see, unless the Steelers get, a bigger lead, or, of course, if Jaguars get into obvious passing downs, you're going to see a lot of the Steelers' base defense on the field in this game.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting because, as we talked about, the Jags, what are they going to come out and do? Are they going to come out and go heavy and try to pound the ball? Will they go a little bit out of character and take shots because the explosiveness of the Steelers offense and what they can do? So it's a big deal for these two guys. And today's injury report, is going to be telling. And then, as you point out, will the Steelers have to make a roster move, which would really kind of screw things up in terms of, where they are and what they're thinking about. I mean, you got to think at this point, if you make a roster move and you got issues with Artie Burns, the only guys who now come into the equation for making a roster move would be, potentially J.J. Wilcox and then Matt Filer. I mean, I don't see where else you can go to find a body. I mean, I guess if with Antonio Brown back, you could Justin Hunter would be a guy in the conversation, Dave. But I don't know. Is there anybody else that you would be considered?
Look, I've said a few times when it comes to Matt Filer, you better not waive that guy if you want him around. I think he's done enough this year that I don't think you want to risk him, to be quite honest with you. So now, obviously, he's a guy that would be a candidate not to dress this week. So you would have to keep that in mind as well, too, because assuming B.J. Finney, and I guess that's a big assumption right now, but I don't think Dr. Mel is too worried about B.J. not being ready to play this week. He's obviously been off since he suffered the injury against the Browns, and he came back in with a taped ankle. So and of course he was listed with the thigh, probably more of a bruised situation. Of course he did practice fully on Thursday, so let's assume Finney is able to go. Well, then Finney and Hubbard are your two guys that dress behind your starting five, and then that leaves Hawkins and Filer as two guys that'll be on the inactive list. I don't think obviously that you cut either of those two guys. So who else is likely to be on your inactive list? And let's assume that two of those guys are defensive linemen, and let's assume Antonio Brown's back, then you're not going to dress Justin Hunter. If you waive Justin Hunter right now, what's the big deal?
Yeah, no big deal.
You could, to me, with the amount of snaps and the very limited production he's had this year, he'll be around the next week. Should you need him back on the roster there. So I would think that if you did indeed need someone from the practice squad, and look, who's your only option on the practice squad right now? That would probably be LaVon Hooks.
Yep.
And do you really want him? I mean, it would have to be pretty bad, I think, at that point. So, I'm not expecting them to have to make a practice squad move, but obviously I did not see how these injuries happen. For all we know, it's just a little tweak with Javon Hargrave. But God forbid, like I said, that you don't have Hargrave. I do indeed think that LT Walton would be your next guy up there as the base nose tackle. And then if you also didn't have Tuitt, then I think you'd have Alualu on the outside. And then your lone backup at that point would be Daniel McCullers to play really all three positions.
So let's play out this worst case scenario, because we don't know where this is going to go. How much does that change your thinking about the ability of the Steelers to shut down the Jags? Not at all. A little bit, significantly.
Look, Alualu's been fine against the run this year. Believe it or not, I mean that he's really had a nice season, against the run this year. So I'm less concerned about him against the run. I would be more concerned, what would happen over the nose. But I mean, let's face it, if you go back and look at what Leonard Fournette and that Jaguars offense has been able to do, during the second half of the season in the running game, since the game after the Steelers, since really week six and on, or after week six and on, their running game has not been all that, David. And, Fournette has missed, I think, a total of three games since then. Two of them, I think, with an ankle, and one, I think it was the late in the season against the Texans, I think maybe with a quad or something like that. But I mean, he has not been all that. So, I would be, obviously it's concerned because your big dogs are not in there, but I think they could get by without them. That's why I continually go back to, boy, if you gave me an option to trade Artie Burns to have both Hargrave and Tuitt, that's the way I'm going there, because I think you need those you're going to need those guys up front. Now, obviously, it would be a loss, but I think they could get by without those guys.
Yeah, because Alualu has been as successful as he's been this year. If you're ranking him, is it Hargrave, Tuitt, and then Burns, if you had your choice?
Oh, wow. Man, I want Tuitt on the field because what he can also give you as a pass rusher, as well. And it's not like you're going to be at base the whole game. So I would be more willing, I think, to take my chances with a guy like LT Walton at nose tackle if I didn't have Hargrave, and if you guaranteed me I could have stuff on to it.
Okay, so we will see how that plays out later this afternoon. Obviously, we'll have the latest news, get your latest updates on SteelersDepot.com.
If I would place a bet right now, both those guys play. But, that's just...
Both being who?
Walton, Hargrave and Tuitt.
And what's your bet on Artie?
Yeah, that's a raw hyperextended D and not seeing it. I mean that's a crapshoot right there. I'd say 50-50, but I would bet some decent money that both Hargrave and Tuitt play, and not only seeing them listed on the injury report.
I'll go with you on that. I will actually bet that Hargrave and Tuitt play as well, and I'll bet that Artie doesn't.
I'll go ahead and bet that Artie does, just for the sake of betting, but I don't have confidence in it. What's the old NBA commercial? It's the playoffs. it's gonna be hard to keep a lot of these guys. out of this game, I think. Now, of course, Artie with the non-contact and the hyperextended knee. But, look, I believe – I want to believe all these guys when they say they're going to practice today and going to play on the weekend. Maybe that's the internal optimist in me. But it forced to lay my 350 on the table right now. I say all three of them play.
Okay. The other news, and you know, we can we'll get into it. We'll cover it because it got attention.
Boy, we just talked 20 minutes about an injury report. That might be a first all season.
Yeah, which is a good thing, right? And the reason we talked 20 minutes about it is because we didn't see any of it, where it's all speculation. So let's hope we're right, and that these guys. Well, let's hope that all three of them can go. The Le'Veon Bell story came out yesterday. Two things. One, let's get the horse in front of the cart here and point to Le'Veon Bell tweeting at some point later in the day that he's 100% focused on what he has to do and, you know, the job in front of him, and that, you know, his only goal is to make sure that you know, that they're focused and doing the right thing coming up on Sunday. In fact, I'll read you the tweet that he put out at 6:40 p.m. yesterday afternoon. Is, I'm trying to win a Super Bowl. I could care less about what happens after the season. My biggest thing is I'm focused on is the team right now, playing for with my brothers and bringing back a seventh ring. What happens next year is irrelevant to my goals. So, Dave, do you agree that anything that was said prior to 6:40 yesterday is going to have zero impact on the game on Sunday?
I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about it causing any, if I had to choose a drama, this would be it.
Right. Even better than the injury report, that would be talking about this.
Absolutely. Because I think most of his damn teammates are so tuned in right now that they're tuned to the rest of that up. And thank God that it kind of happened really later in the week as opposed to, early in the week, because I don't know what kind of media, commitments that they have, the players have today and tomorrow, but it's obviously going to be a lot lower than it would at the beginning of the week there. So I don't think there's going to be an opportunity for a lot of these guys to even have to be asked about what Le'Veon said. And, you know, if they're not asked about it, they're not having to think about it and that kind of thing. And for the most part, anyway, I think most of them probably got it, you know, oh, that's just Le'Veon kind of thing. And look, it's a business. Now, the question becomes, you can watch Yinzer Nation, the DEFCON level rise on Twitter of Steeler fans yesterday.
And it was unbelievable. I have to tell you.
It went right up through the roof there. The DEFCON 5 or 1 or whatever the damn highest one of those is. Why does he have to say it now on the eve of the playoffs? And
people
and,
criticizing and, Jeremy Fowler for asking a question.
Oh yeah, stupid media. It's all the media's fault for asking about it. It's amazing, the type of stuff that you read, on the Twitter machine. Here, look, it's the playoffs. There are how many teams left now, David? Eight.
Eight.
So what's the spotlight on?
The spotlight's on those eight teams.
It's on those eight teams. And, Jeremy was probably smart if he was able to corner Le'Veon Bell and ask him a related question. And this time of year right now, where all the focus is on a few teams, and look, like it or not, the focus is probably a little bit more on the Steelers, because, you know, it's the Steelers. You've had a lot of drama around this team all season. And, B, this is a team that usually garners a lot of attention even without, you know, drama being around, because, you know, being a successful franchise and oh, yeah, there's probably another, you know, we all hope there's a forthcoming rematch in the AFC Championship game against the New England Patriots. So, yeah, there's a lot of attention on them. And he probably knew it, and his agent, Adisa Bakari, probably knows it as well, too. And at first blush, if he gets asked a question about, you know, potentially getting, and make no mistake, too. It might not seem like it, but the deadline for the franchise tag, it really isn't too terribly far off at this point. So it makes sense to really start asking questions about Bell potentially getting a tag again. And I was not a bit shocked at all that of what Bell said. And now, if you're gonna say something like that, I think you're kind of, there's no sense going to Twitter and trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube, if you will. But I think he generally thinks he means what he says, but does he?
Here's the thing, and I tweeted this, and I had people come at me for this. I said there's a 0.0 chance that Le'Veon Bell is going to sit out next season if he gets franchised, and I honestly believe that. And look, we saw the Aaron Donald situation at the beginning of the season. I think he came back right before, right after the first game. He didn't play in, I think, the Rams' first game of the season. Look, Le'Veon Bell's career earnings coming into this year were $4.1 million. He made $12.1 million this year. He tripled his career earnings. It means he's made $16 million over his career. I had guys coming at me with Calvin Johnson and Patrick Willis. We're talking about the guys who retired. Guys don't give up generational changing money. The problem is, and Le'Veon Bell knows this, is if you're a player, you don't have any leverage in this situation. And it's not, it's not the man putting somebody down, as somebody, said to me on Twitter. This is negotiated in the CBA. And we can talk about how bad a job the Players Association has done in their negotiations with ownership, but this is collectively bargained. It's agreed to, and a guy can be tagged multiple times. It's just, Le'Veon Bell already made 50% more than any running back in the NFL this year. So I think the second highest paid guy made $8 million. So he made $4 million more than that in his contract. And he would, again, I don't think anybody's scheduled to make $10 million next year. So he would get bumped to $15 million. Look, I'm not saying that Le'Veon Bell doesn't have an argument. He turned down a long-term deal with the Steelers. But let's just talk about realism, the reality of a situation where you're a running back, and we all know when you're getting 400 touches a season, your number of years you're going to play in the NFL isn't going to be 15 like an offensive lineman might be or a quarterback might be. You've got a shelf life, and if you take one of those years, your prime earning years, dead out of the middle, and skip it, you're never getting that money back. It's not coming back. So Le'Veon Bell's going to play football for somebody next year. I don't know if it's going to be the Steelers at $15 million. I don't know if it's going to be the Steelers on a long-term deal. I think that's the least likely of the three. Or I don't know if it's going to be somebody else. But Le'Veon Bell's going to be playing in the NFL next year.
Here's what I tweeted way before you tweeted what you tweeted. Bell better be prepared to wear that tag all year. LOL. That's me being hip with the kids. He's threatening sitting out season and perhaps retiring. But honestly, how many of you think he'll actually follow through with that? And then a little bit later, I tweeted this. I just can't see the Steelers getting Bell signed to a long-term deal prior to the tag deadline, which is in latter part of March. So he better get ready for that tag. Look forward to another offseason with him not around until after the preseason is over. And exactly 1 week ago, I wrote about some of the offseason things that the Steelers have coming up on a calendar that they have to address. And I had a full paragraph about the decision of Bell and the tag. And in that, I put in there that I don't think that that they're going to have a hard time. And March 6th, by the way, is they can start designating franchise and transition players on February 20th, and the deadline for those decisions is March the 6th. And then in exactly 1 week ago from yesterday, I wrote about Bell and the franchise tag. And I started it with saying the first day for clubs to designate the franchise or transition players is February 20th, and the deadline for those decisions is March 6th. The Steelers' only legitimate tag candidate during the offseason is running back Le'Veon Bell, and it will cost them $14.54 million in 2018 should they decide to place it on him. Just like last offseason, giving Bell a franchise tag will make it make make signing him to a long-term deal extremely difficult, so the Steelers must be prepared for him to play under the tag amount in 2018, in addition to him possibly staying away from the team all offseason, just as he did in 2017. That's it. That's all anybody needs to know at this point. And immediately the Yenzer GMs come at you both at Twitter and me and my email machine as well. And they go, why don't we just tag and trade him? How many times have you heard that happening? And then others are saying, well, why don't we tag, sign, and trade him? Well, that's not going to happen because you're going to eat the signing bonus, as dead money. So, that's not going to happen either. It really comes down to, and Kevin Colbert has said this in the past, and it has stuck to me. And I think the last real time that he said it in sort of a situation similar to this, I think, was with Mike Wallace. He says, we decide when players leave. Okay. And that's true here. Now for Le'Veon Bell to come out this time of year and basically, I don't know what he was expecting to accomplish by saying this. Now, his best course action, I know why he did it, but his best course action should have been, look, we're in the playoffs right now. In a few more weeks, I'll be able to address my views on this. By him saying that, I don't know, in essence, trying to fire the warning shot that he did over the bow of the boat, I just can't imagine that him and Adisa Bakari both thought that Omar Khan and Kevin Colbert were going to come a running. There was really nothing to gain other than getting a head start with the media during a kind of semi-dead, a portion of the week, if you will, of this being front page news, so to speak. So here's what I expect to happen. I expect Le'Veon Bell to get the franchise tag, and that's it. And we're going to be talking all offseason. Where are they going to sign him? Because, look, and we said this before, when you give a player a tag, you're telling him that that is what he's worth a season, and he's going to want more than that. So now if you give him a tag at $14.54 million, what is he going to think his value is on an average yearly value for a long-term contract? And we're talking about a guy, too, who after signing his tag last year said, I want to be paid like a number one running back and a number two wide receiver. So he's basically going to want $17 or $18 million a season. Am I right?
Look, I don't know what Le'Veon Bell wants. The idea that it's not about money, it's about respect. It's about money because he's equating money with respect. Obviously, it's about money. I mean, it's always about money.
It's always about money. Everything's always about money.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole idea, when anybody says it's not about money, you're pretty damn sure that it's about money. I don't know what to say about it. I don't have any problem with Le'Veon Bell answering a question that was asked. He did the right thing to put out the next tweet that we read to defuse the situation, what little stir it might have caused. But again, I'll come back to the fact that, when you've made $15 million in your life and you get a chance to make $15 million in your next season and you're in your prime earning years, you don't pass that up. But I understand saying things you say. People don't always, say things they mean. They say things because that's the leverage they have. And this is the only leverage Le'Veon Bell has. And if we're going to hear about this when the Steelers season ends. So it just came up a little bit earlier than expected. Hopefully it's Steelers season doesn't end for a month, but it could be over in Sunday afternoon. It could be done. And if that's the case, then this will be the next topic. As soon as they get finished asking Ben Roethlisberger whether he's going to retire, the minute the Steelers lose this season, whether it's Sunday, the following Sunday in New England, at home against Tennessee, or in the Super Bowl, the first question will be, Ben Roethlisberger, are you going to retire? And the second question will be to Le'Veon Bell, and what's he going to do if they franchise him, and can he reach a long-term deal with the Steelers? That's it. That's going to be the offseason conversation, dominating the offseason conversation for an extended period of time.
You know what I'd like to do next time I get a chance to have my buddy Joel Corey on, former NFL agent. You know, 12 point, you know, Le'Veon Bell, $12.12 million this past year. Well, you know, how much, you know, I'd like to find out from Joel, how much of that, you know, goes to the agent. How much does a player, you know, obviously taxes kid gets quite a bit of it. Now, I'm sure Le'Veon has some outside endorsements, probably money coming in. But I guess what I'm getting at is, you see that $12.12 million. Well, that, you know, that number was lower than that. You know, the take home was lower than that. But how much lower was that? You know, are we talking about a guy that, you know, essentially made, you know, $8 million? This past season, in short, and look, $8 million don't go as far as it used to, right? not that I know, but in short, I mean, he's still there. There is going to be an opportunity for another almost $15 million out there, and 15 plus 12, you know, that's $27 million. Now, $27 million for a career, you could probably get by and not have to worry about eating Subway the rest of your life, you know, at that point. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not buying this. I'm going to sit out, or I might retire, and I'm okay with my legacy. Man, just look at that guy's Twitter feed and listen to some of his rap songs. That guy likes the limelight too much, and he's not going to sit out and miss a chance to.
And he's all about the money. Yeah, as you say, the whole rap song was about pay the man, you know, $15 million or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's no, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with being all about the money. You know, there are plenty of people out there whose goal is to better their standing in life and make money and take care of themselves and maybe take care of the family for generations, or their current family or their friends. I'm all for it. Good for them.
You know, when I occasionally make the mistake and I ask my wife what's going
no,
on.
No, come on. You don't make any mistakes.
This is true. when I make wrong, bad decisions.
Fair enough. Both in line there.
When I ask, well, how the account's looking? She says, we need more money. So it is always about the money. I'm not. And look, and here, you know, the junior Yenzer GMs then too start going, oh, well, here's one that I got yesterday. Oh, they got the Steelers by the balls here because they got very limited cap space already on the books for next year. You know, they can't afford to carry that $14.54 million cap hit with him next year, yada, yada, and now they're going to be forced into giving him pay him what he wants. We're you people not been fans of the Steelers for like 6 months or whatnot. You're not gonna make Kevin Colbert, Art Rooney II, and Omar Khan do anything that they don't want to do. And for all you people that think you understand the cap and that the Steelers are up against it, look, we've seen the sky has fallen from Bill Barnwell for like 17 years in a row. I'm exaggerating there, but I mean, not much.
It's from every guy, every media person, every offseason.
There are already going to be quick ways to massage this thing. You can even start with a guy like J.J. Wilcox, who's scheduled to earn, I think, $3.125 million during the offseason. Boom. I just freed you up a little over $3 million. Now, of course, some of this is going to have to go to futures and restricted tenders and yada yada. You also got a guy like Stephon Tuitt, who's due a $7.5 million roster bonus right out of the chute at the start of the new year. That and some of his base salary can be turned into a signing bonus. I freed you up some more money there. Now, whether or not they'd go after a guy like Antonio Brown, you know, with his age or whatnot, but I mean, he's on a fairly new contract, and would it make sense that, you know, maybe go get a little, free up a little bit of money there via restructure? And depending on what you even know about Ben Roethlisberger, maybe his you know, about his future. You know, may worst come to worst, you can go to there and free up a little bit of cap money as well, too, via restructure. And, oh, yeah, there's other guys like Alejandro Villanueva that's due a roster bonus of $3 million. You can go get a little bit of money from via restructure. And as we talked about, I don't think not too long ago on the show, you know, Joe Hayden, you can always, you know, I don't think as we sit here right now, Joe Hayden's going to have a nearly $12 million cap number in 2018. Now, does that mean you're going to cut him? Well, I don't. You know, I think they like him a lot. I don't think they're going to go that route. But I could see them adding a couple of maybe false years, you know, onto his deal, and perhaps turning that $1 million roster bonus and some of that base salary of his into a signing bonus to lower his cap hit as well, too. So people are saying that Le'Veon Bell, by making a statement that he made yesterday, had the Steelers by the balls. Come on. And the other half, as soon as you bring up the term restructure, they start freaking out. Look, kicking the can down the road when you have a franchise quarterback is part of doing business in the NFL. And while you still have that franchise quarterback and you have the ability to put together the roster that you have and potentially keep Le'Veon Bell around for at least one more season, you do it, because that could equate to another Super Bowl there. So stop all the whining about the restructures. Stop telling me that Le'Veon Bell has the Steelers by the balls, because you don't know what Jens is talking about.
Okay. So we've covered Le'Veon Bell. So we did hit Le'Veon, I think, at the end, either last Friday or Monday, and given our thoughts, and we'll give them periodically throughout this offseason until a decision is made. But the reality is, if Le'Veon Bell is planned for the Steelers next year, you're not going to see him in training camp again. So if you're going to St. Vincent, don't expect to see number 26 on the sideline again. Okay, Dave, a couple things. One is, you know, again,
before we wrap him up, would you sign him to, I mean, would you, let's say the number 17 a season. Okay, $17 million a season. Would you sign him to a long-term deal now? I mean, you just offered him a long-term deal last offseason. Does 1 year and 500 more touches change any of the any of the discussion here? You know, another year older and running back fungibility. Hey, let's not forget. Look, he had a great season, bar none. But his successful run rate was down this year, and his average yards per touch was down too. Now, I don't know how much you want to read into that at all, but it's the fact of the matter that those two things, there was lack of production across the board, even though he finished second in the NFL with total yards from scrimmage behind Todd Gurley. So, you know, does he deserve accolades? You know, you're almost rewarding the guy with an all-pro because he was able to stay healthy and play 97% of the snaps and be on the field to accumulate those yards. Now, granted, I will admit, a great pass catcher out of the backfield, a very smart wide receiver that run that choice route on top of it, can do a lot of things with the football in his hands after the catch for you, as well. But point blank, is he worth $17 million on a team that already has a franchise quarterback and a franchise wide receiver and several franchise linemen under contract? Or do you just give him that tag? Use him up a little bit more in 2018, shake his hand, and send him on his way.
I mean, there are a lot of ways to answer this. First of all, look, he led all running backs in receptions with 85. Alvin Kamara had 80. Excuse me. Alvin Kamara, rookie, had 81. Christian McCaffrey, rookie, had 80. And, we saw Duke Johnson, who's made really a wide receiver, had 74 for Cleveland. But the point that I want to make in relation to that is, you're not, Le'Veon Bells aren't a dime a dozen. Yes, the two best running backs out of the draft this year were taken in the third round. They went eighth and ninth, I think, or seventh and eighth, whatever it is, Kamara and Hunt. Hunt and Kamara, they both go in the third round, along with, by the way, James Conner. He went in the third round. There were a lot of good – I think Dalvin Cook, we mentioned McCaffrey. We've obviously talked a lot about Fournette this week. Joe Mixon, I think, is going to be a good back. I mean, I think the running backs who were taken in this draft in the first three rounds are all going to be very good NFL running backs. Todd Gurley wasn't really seen as much of a pass-catching running back. He had 64 catches in his first 2 years total, I think. He had 64 this season. He averaged 12.3 yards a catch. That's versus McCaffrey's 8.1. That's versus Le'Veon Bell's 7.7. Those balls that are thrown to Le'Veon Bell, you know, some of them are outlet stuff. Certainly there's play design where they look for mismatches. But I think if you get a good NFL running back, it's going to be a mismatch on any linebacker that you put out there in the NFL. We've seen it with these other guys. They can do it. They can make plays. So would I like to have Le'Veon Bell at $15 million? I think I would for another season. Do I want to sign Le'Veon Bell to a four-year deal at $17 million a year, average annual value, something along the lines of Antonio Brown? I probably don't. Le'Veon Bell may be a more important player to the Steelers because 400 touches is more important than 100 touches with Antonio Brown. But Antonio Brown, I think, is a more unique player at his position because I don't think Antonio Brown is largely replaceable. You can go find a receiver, but I think you can go find running backs who are going to get closer to Le'Veon Bell than you are going to find a wide receiver who's closer to Antonio Brown at the elite level. I'm sure a lot of people are going to disagree with that. And I do think 400 touches is more important than 100 touches. But I think you can find two guys and, you know, mix guys up and get closer to that production, the production that Bell had, than you can to get to the kind of elite receiver level. Because the guys they drafted in the first three rounds of the NFL draft aren't going to be anywhere close to Antonio Brown this year, as whereas some of the guys they've drafted in the first three rounds in the NFL draft the past couple of years are close to Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, and look, I understand why guys like Bell, who's at the top of the running back food chain right now, get aggravated and want to say running backs are devalued or whatnot. I mean, after all, you know, he'll probably tell you if things go right, he's going to touch the football 500 times between now and the end of the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, sure. 25, 33 more times.
That's a lot of touches. Whereas a guy like Antonio Brown, how many max times could he potentially touch the ball from start of the season till the end of the Super Bowl? He played all 16 games and had to play in complete wild card and all rounds of the playoffs. You're thinking at max. And this is extremely high, maybe 200 touches. Okay, and that's high. I mean, that's making sure you give yourself a buffer there. So not even half of what Le'Veon Bell touches the football in a 500 scenario there. And yet you're devaluing the position there. But I think it's because of the risk that comes along with it too. I mean, that's a lot of hits in the backfield, a lot of chances of being at the bottom of the piles and twisted ankles. And like it or not, Le'Veon Bell hasn't been necessarily the picture of health during his career. Knock on wood, he's done very good to keep himself healthy this year. And during the offseason, you know, there's not many probably players in the NFL that train harder and keep themselves in top physical condition. I think Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin has said as much. But sometimes some of those unfortunate things you just cannot control. And look, you like those kind of guys, those all-purpose backs, when you can get them and can get them on the cheap. But once they reach a certain price point, it becomes, can I get two younger guys to an Ingram and a Kamara to kind of mesh these things together and be fungible and get by. And look, I mean, there's some decent teams in the playoffs right now that haven't run the football overly great this season. So,
there's a pretty strong, statistical world out there that suggests that, success at running the football does not equate to NFL success. Passing efficiency is a much larger and more important component. It doesn't mean that you can't have a running team that's successful. It's just, and it also will show, look, who are the least successful teams in terms of efficiency and stopping the run? It's the Patriots and the Steelers. Who are the top two favorites in Vegas to win the Super Bowl? It's the Patriots and the Steelers. Not that that's a necessarily direct correlation. It's just, running the football is significant, but the pass, passing efficiency is more important. And as Dave points out, look, it's, if you think James Conner is a guy who can, run the ball effectively for you 15 times a game, and you go find a McCaffrey light in round number three who can be a good pass catching third down back and is able to pick up the blitz, which is, not an insignificant component. Well, then you just saved yourself literally about $14.5 million. So, the numbers. Is he valuable? Of course, he's incredibly valuable. Can you put that production together much cheaper? Well, if Kevin Colbert hits a home run, you can. If he doesn't, what does it cost you? That's the question.
And make no mistake about it. I think Bell's primary value to this team is as a receiver more so than a running back. He doesn't break long runs for the most part, right? So it's not like you're gonna get. 5 home runs out of a year with 2 of those going for touchdowns. Now that I said that, he'll break a 75.
Right. And again, people are going to think we're poking holes in Le'Veon Bell. It's not. It's a question of what's $15 million cost.
Right. Exactly. He averaged, 4.4 yards a carry this year. We already talked about his successful run percentage being down this year. And his average yards per catch, I think, was a little bit down this year as well, too. But make no mistake, the ability to multi, look, he made the all-pro team this year as what position? A flex. That's where his extreme value is, because you can look across from the line of scrimmage, see what personnel you have out there, and you can treat Le'Veon Bell either as a running back or exactly like a wide receiver if you want, and get wide receiver production out of him. And that's what makes him so damn valuable league-wide, if you ask me. How many guys are out of football right now that if you gave them the football 321 times behind the Steelers' offensive line could probably average either 4 yards per carry or pretty damn close to it?
You would think, lots of backs.
And look, I understand there's more. It's not so easy just to say and do that, because, look, pass protection, and one thing that Le'Veon Bell does not get enough recognition for is his recognition and his ability to pass block. But that's something you don't have stats for, that he can't. All he can do is point to his receptions and his receiving yards and his touchdowns and his rushing yards, because there's no stats that said, looky here, I picked up this blitz and Roethlisberger completed a 42-yard reception because of it, kind of thing. Yeah, I know it. Agents know it. Owners know it. General managers know it all. But it's just not one of those kind of tangible things that we can put a number on and talk about. He is. And like you said, we're not here to pick holes in Le'Veon Bell, but make no mistake about it, the fact that he's able to go out there and catch you 85 balls during the season and present some mismatches for you is where his value really lies. And you can say the same thing about David Johnson as well, too, and it's going to be an interesting situation. Interesting situation come time for the Cardinals, right? I mean, you have David Johnson lost a full season, and correct me if I'm wrong, he's a little bit older than you know, most running backs that came out that year. You know, man, does he say move me to wide receiver? He could probably function in the league as a wide receiver full time. Now, obviously, it's not going to come to that, but it's going to be interesting to see the Cardinals try to tackle this as well, too, because there are so few players around the league. The Kamara, well, I don't know, maybe we're getting more of them now. The McCaffreys, the Kamaras, the Bells, the David Johnsons. At some point, does the pay catch up? I don't know.
Yeah, David Johnson just turned 26 in December. So, you know, again, you know, how many of these guys are – it doesn't mean you can't be effective at 30. I mean, Shady, I think, is pushing 30, and we've seen guys, you know, play at the league, and I would expect, barring injury, both those guys to be effective guys. It's just to you know, again, the point is Le'Veon Bell made 50% more than any running back in the league this year. And then you have to decide, what does it cost you to replace that production? And with James Conner's going to be making, you know, let's just say make up a number, $1 million next year, and you go find another running back, as I say, in the draft, who's going to make, you know, $600,000, and you match that together and you say, okay, if you get 80%, let's just, take rough numbers, 80% of that production, and with Stephen Ridley in there as well, at, one-eighth the cost, and that's money you can go spend elsewhere, then, you know, sometimes you got to make difficult decisions. It, certainly, this would be a situation where if Le'Veon Bell weren't tagged, it would be one of the rare occasions where it's not like it never happens. But, you know, like Mike Wallace, guys in their prime. Now, Le'Veon Bell's obviously a much, much better player than Mike Wallace was when he walked out. But, you know, we haven't seen that many players leave the Steelers in their prime.
You know, Le'Veon Bell want to get mad at somebody, you should get mad at Devontae Freeman for taking the money that he took.
Right. And obviously people, you know, look at – and Dave's point is he is the other back who signed this offseason to a long-term deal at, I think, $8.5 million a year, right, or something like that, AAV?
Yeah, 8.25. He's almost $4 million less than Le'Veon Bell this past year. And now Le'Veon's going to go up to 14.54, and he's probably going to want 17. He's going to want twice what the guy behind him make. So if he, you know, Le'Veon, I hope Le'Veon Bell didn't send Devontae Freeman any Christmas cards or edible arrangements this year, because you want to talk about costing you some money. And who is, I mean, who is going to even rival, who's going to even rival $12.12 million during the offseason when you look at some of the names on this list? Freeman's already signed.
Zeke's not up. He's in his rookie deal.
Yeah, right. Zeke's not up. Leonard Fournette's not going to get it. Kamara's obviously not going to get it. You're not going to pay Lamar Miller that money. DeMarco Murray's already been there, done that. He's not getting it.
Giovanni. We're talking about guys who aren't going to make $5 million now, you know, with Murray and Miller and those guys.
I mean, right. Well, DeMarco Murray's average yearly value is $6.375 million. He's hurt now. You think is he in the final year of his contract? I'm trying to remember real quick. No. He's got DeMarco Murray's got two more years. I'll tell you one guy's going to be on the market here pretty soon.
DeMarco Murray.
It's DeMarco Murray.
I'll bet he doesn't see $3 million a year the rest of his career.
You know, and Chris Ivory, bless his heart, $6.4 million average yearly value.
Chris Ivory's making $6.4 million this year.
That's his average yearly value.
Is he done? Because he's cut.
Huh? He's
cut.
He signed through 2020. He's scheduled to earn $5.5 million base salary in 2018. That's not happening.
He's cut and signed Chris Ivory. You know, whatever. I like Chris Ivory.
Doug Martin, 7-point average yearly value, a little over $7.1 million, and he is signed through 2020. He's scheduled to earn $6.75 million base salary in 2018.
He might come back at that number, maybe.
I mean, it gets thin. It gets thin kind of quick here. I mean, who are the guys?
Yeah, most of the best guys are on their rookie deals right now because the young guys have been good. But, you know, what's Gio making? You know, Gio's signed Gio to be your pass catching back.
$5.1 million.
Yeah, he's cut. He's going
to
be cut.
What's he going to earn? Gio's set to earn next year $3.1 million base, and he has a couple of workout and roster bonuses, about $500,000 worth right there. So he's scheduled to carry a cap hit right now for the Bengals of $4.25 million. But are you going to pay that guy more than you're going to pay Jeremy Mixon or Joe Mixon and play him less, you know?
So, people know how I feel about Gio. So if I would be fine with a backfield of James Conner if he's 100% and Stephen Ridley and Gio Bernard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Pay Gio, you know, 2 years, $6 million in a second. And that's my three-headed monster in the backfield. I'm good with it.
Well, there's one. I tell you, one guy is probably hoping he gets cut, and that is Gio, even though his contract runs through 2019, because there is going to be a market for him. He's only 26. He doesn't really have a lot of mileage on him, you know. So, I mean, he might getting cut might actually make him some money. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean. And this all goes back to, you know, Le'Veon Bell. that franchise tend to come across. You better sign it, man. I mean, we know he won't, but I think I'd take that $14.54 million, sign that thing, and go about my business.
Okay, so let's move forward. Ian Whetstone does some work on the Steelers and the cap, and one of the interesting things he put out this week was just a cumulative total of dollars made for different Steelers in their career. If you haven't seen it, check it out. I retweeted it. The only reason I bring that up is because if you've never looked at it, and I'm sure you have, but if people have never seen the cumulative dollars guys have made, obviously the money made, you know, now in recent years, just trumps anybody who played, you know, before 1995, period. They're not even in the conversation. But what I think the two most interesting things are, number two on the list is Troy Polamalu. He's made $71 million. Number one on the list is Ben Roethlisberger. He's made $72 million. Oh, wait, he's made $172 million. So Ben has made $100 million more than any other Steeler ever. And the second place guy is $71 million at Troy, and Ben's made $100 million more than that. And you just think about, you know, how money's spread out in the NFL as we talk about Le'Veon Bell's situation and Antonio Brown's situation. Pretty remarkable. 25th on the list is Lavon Kirkland at $22 million. So you could see Antonio Brown making $17 million, Le'Veon making 15. If he were to make $15 million, just how that compares. In his 9 years, Lavon Kirkland made $22 million, and he's 25th on the Steelers list. So, just, you know, salaries today, the top end guys making a lot more, and the quarterbacks, man, do they make more than anybody ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a guy like Le'Veon Bell, you know, if he is tagged a second year, he's not going to get tagged a third year because that's the quarterback tag. And you'd be out of your ever-loving mind to tag a player, a running back at that amount, especially let's even assume that he gets another 500 touches in 2018. You know, that's 1,000 touches over the course of 2 years. That's a lot of damn touches. You're not going to put a quarterback tag on a running back at that. So he'd hit the market. He's guaranteed to hit the market after the 2018 season. And all it takes is one, and that, you know, there will be a team willing to pay him a lot of money, so he can still hit the bank as long as he stays healthy and semi-productive. You would figure that he's still going to be one of the top backs in the league, so why not just go ahead and collect that $14.5 million, go about your business, and hit your one final payday there, you know, after the 2018 season is over. I know it's easier said than done. They want the money now because anything can happen. You just look at the situation with Ryan Shazier or whatnot. I mean, it's a cold reality that every player is one play away from having their NFL career. I mean, we're all day to day, right?
Absolutely. All right. So we've killed that. We'll get into, obviously you can look down the list and figure out who might be playing their last game at Heinz Field. We know who the guys are. We got plenty of time in the offseason to go through the roster, or even next week as we prepare for hopefully the Steelers prepare for the Patriots or the Titans. So Dave, why don't we get into the other three games a little bit? I think we've diagnosed our thoughts on Steelers Ravens pretty completely. So let's do a quick recap.
And Steelers Jaguars.
Oh, yes, Steelers Jaguars, right. Steelers Ravens, Steelers Jaguars. There was a good analytics podcast. It's called the Football Analytics Podcast with Ed Fang, and he had a Wharton professor on his podcast yesterday talking about the effects of the running game and the passing game efficiency stuff. If people are looking for another podcast to listen to after this one, check out Ed's the Massey. He had the guy Cade Massey, who's a professor at Wharton, who does the Massey Peabody Index ranking, kind of a power ranking of college teams and NFL teams. So it's something to put in if you're looking to kill some time before the playoff games kick off at 4:30 on Saturday. Okay, Dave, Falcons, Eagles. And one of the discussions that they had in this game is the difficulty of quantifying the value of a quarterback for Vegas in point spreads. How much is Carson Wentz really worth with this Philly Eagles offense? And how much is Nick Foles worth in this offense? And they both came up with a number like 5 or 6 and both felt like it was actually higher. The Falcons are a 3-point favorite in Philly. If Wentz was playing, I'm sure the Eagles would be somewhere between a 3 and a 7-point favorite, Dave. So we understand the role of the quarterback. Matt Ryan goes into Philadelphia after going into Seattle. What was it? I can't even remember. Who'd they beat last week?
Who's that?
Who did the Falcons? Oh, they went into L.A. They beat the Rams last week. So now they get to go into Philly. The number one seed is a dog. One of the rare, rare occasions the number one seed is a dog in their first playoff game. Who you like? Atlanta -3.
Man, you know me. I'm gonna go with the quarterback. The only concern is, the weather. I think playing a factor. You know, obviously Atlanta is a dome team, but this isn't Matt Ryan's first rodeo, and that Falcons team got a lot of guys back from the playoff team last year. They're not great. You know, they're not exceptional on either side of the ball, but they're good enough, I think. And the thing that the Eagles, to me this week, the Eagles are almost the NFC version of the Jaguars. Okay, their defense is going to have to win them this game, I think. And I'm not convinced that they're able to do it. You know, you want to talk about a nice two-headed monster over there in running back with Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman. You know, that's a nice option to have. And then obviously with a nice tandem in Sanu and some guy named Julio over there, and then obviously Matt Ryan, the quarterback, and Nick Foles, bless his heart. I have liked a lot of things that Nick Foles has done in the past, but he's just not that starting. He's just that step below the starting quarterback, I think, and it's going to be tough with that receiving crew that he has. Jay Ajayi, I'm just not a big Jay Ajayi fan, David. You want to talk about a guy that might even be back out on the street again after this season? It might be Jay Ajayi. Yeah, I know they got some smash and bash with Blunt as well too. If they don't force turnovers in this game, I think it's going to be very hard for them to win. Now, what's the line you're showing on this?
3.
Man, give me the Falcons to cover it on the road, David.
Well, you were right last week. You had the Falcons winning outright as 5.5-point dogs, and they did. Yeah, look, I agree with everything you said. The Falcons are obviously a much better team in the second half of the season here than they were early in the season. They struggled. They struggled at home. They struggled on the road, and they've sorted a lot of that out. They I'm not a huge believer in experience, but all things equal, I'll take experience. But the difference is here, the experienced guy is also the better guy at quarterback. And all you need to know about the Eagles is when there's discussion the last 2 weeks of the season about playing a guy who's never played. I don't think the Sudfield, the backup Sudfo, however you say his name, I don't think the kid's ever taken a snap. and when you're actually there is actually real conversation about who your starting quarterback's going to be, that tells you everything you need to know. So I'll be rooting for the Eagles in this game. I don't know that I will touch it, but I think I'm with you. I think the Falcons will do the work and go into Philly and win. New England and the Titans. There's nothing interesting about this game other than the Steelers playing the winner. And I'm sure there are plenty of, like last week, all the focus, rightly so, the much more interesting games, if you don't have a dog in the fight, are in the NFC. Dave, what do you say about this game? It's if they can shoot, much the formula that Buffalo had to use in Jacksonville last week. Mariota's a more capable quarterback, probably. He can do some things with his legs. They're going to have to score early, hope for some, weather maybe to slow down the Patriots offense and take shots against the Patriots pass defense. I mean, look, the Patriots defense is not impregnable. But the problem is Tennessee doesn't have a lot of playmakers. I mean, Corey Davis is in his rookie year. There's just not a lot there. So we'll see what happens. 13.5 seems like a good line to me. I'll take the Patriots by 17. So I'll say they cover. But much like I don't see it for Jacksonville, I don't see it for Tennessee either.
Unless they design some plays where Marcus Mariota can get the ball to himself out in the open field, throw more passes to himself, Marcus Mariota on the wheel route. We talked last week. How the heck are they going to score? And yeah, look, the Patriots pass defense, probably not all that, but I think when you look at this Patriots defense, the pass defense, from the middle of season on, they've really come around, man. They really have, come around, and guys like Decker and the likes just don't scare you, and they're not going to have Murray in this game. And look, I know Derrick Henry had a strong game last week, but you better be able to run the ball. You better have some very creative stuff on offense, because let's face it, how many points are the Titans going to have to score in order to win? At the minimum, they're going to have to score, what, 22 points at the minimum?
I would think, yeah.
And probably 24. Realistic or 23 realistically, at a minimum. I just don't know. Just looking at that alone, I'm not sure how they get to that number. They're going to have obviously the turnover factor in here. How much zone is Dick LeBeau going to be able to play versus man? We've seen Brady just carve up LeBeau defenses in the past. Now they do have a Dory Jackson. They're able to play probably a little bit more man than sometime LeBeau was able, during his time in Pittsburgh. I just don't see this, David.
Bronk's going to crush them.
Yeah, I think they, I think they just get crushed. I think the Patriots cover.
Okay, the Saints and the Vikings. This is the late game on Sunday. These are, I wish the NFC were split so that these two teams weren't playing each other here. Now that the Rams are done, these are my two favorite teams. And I do think the winner of this game will be the representative in the Super Bowl. If the Eagles don't win, either one of these teams will be home. The Falcons will be on the road to either of these teams if they do win. A little surprised, Dave, the line's 5. I would have expected it to be maybe 2.5. I know we're both high on the Saints and what they can do offensively, but this is a really good Vikings defense. Xavier Rhodes is an all-pro corner. They do everything well on the defensive side of the ball, and it just comes down to can Case Keenum continue to find his two very good receivers in Diggs and Thielen, who was also an all-pro. Five's too many, so I'll take the 5 points. But I like this game, and I don't have a rooting interest because I wish they both win. But I think the winner's the NFC rep in the Super Bowl.
Well, this is played indoors, right?
Yep.
I mean, now if this was played outdoors where Minnesota was playing previously, I'd be more inclined here. Drew Brees is so incredibly smart, man. I mean, And he still make plays with that arm and his legs, for that matter. Getting outside the pocket really moves good for a guy his age. We already talked about Kamara and Ingram, that 1-2 punch. You know, Thomas, a fantastic receiver. Look, Minnesota's no slouch on the other side of football. You know, with their wide receivers, and yeah, their defense. I mean, that's played a big role in what they are. I just can't help but think that Case Keenum's going to turn back into Case Keenum. You know, that's just the one variable. You know, across the board, I think the one variable here is the quarterbacks, because these essentially, I think, are two fairly evenly matched teams here. I'm gonna go with the Saints, David. I'm gonna go with the experience and a little bit better probably running game here, and being able to use Kamara out of the backfield a little bit more. Yeah, we saw some cheeks in the Saints defensive armor maybe last week against Carolina. I just have a feeling that Case Keenum turns back into Case Keenum here, and I'm gonna take the Saints in the upset on the road.
Now, you know, we said it when the Vikings played in Pittsburgh, how, you know, I was impressed with Case Keenum's toughness. I mean, he got his ass whooped in that Steelers, whatever it was, 29-9, 27-9 game that they won, 26-9 maybe it was. I think they're a good team, and I think he's played the whole season, so I don't know that the pressure, the quote-unquote pressure, is going to get to him, and he's going to turn into Mary Poppins here in this game. So I expect him to play well, but I'm with you. I like the Saints, so I think they'll. I'll take him, and I'll take him to win outright in hopefully what's an entertaining game. Which brings us to the Steelers and the Jags. And Dave, we've crushed this game. We'll see what happens with the Steelers injury report today, which will tell us something about what happens. While we were talking, I was texting with a couple of the beat writers. They expect Hargrave and Tuitt to play, as we discussed. Didn't get I don't think anybody has a very good sense of where Artie Burns is going to be. So I do think the Steelers, I think the one way the Jags win is they come out throwing and they win the turnover battle by two or more. And if that happens, the Jags can definitely win this game. If they pick off Ben a couple times and they've got the secondary to do it, that can happen. Having said that, the way Ben's played the second half of the season, I think the Steelers are too good. I think the Steelers might be as talented as anybody in the NFL playoffs. The thing that worries me is their pass defense, and it doesn't worry me in this game. So I think the Steelers win rather comfortably, and I'll kind of almost reverse the score that we saw in the first game. I'll make it 27-12. The Steelers, you know, kind of taking care of business in round one.
Look, I mean, I think it would almost take a repeat of what happened in that Week 5 game for the Jaguars to win. And you know, yes, their defense. Here's an interesting stat for you. On the road this season, the Jaguars' red zone defense only allowed 33.333333% touchdowns conversion in the red zone. In total, they allowed six.
And 0-3. Steelers were 0-3 in the first matchup, so that contributed to that.
Right. And you got to remember, technically, the Jaguars played 9 road games this year because of the game against Baltimore in London over there. And they only, in total, they allowed 6 red zone touchdowns this year, and the 49ers had four of them just a few weeks ago, which, by the way, I'm calling it now. We're going to see around the 20, between the 20 and 30 yard line, with looking at your screen from the Steelers offense going right to left, you're going to see a wheel route to Roosevelt Nix, okay? I'm pointing to the fence right now when it comes to that. Boy, it was such beauty. Go look at that. For those of you why I'm going that angle, I went through the last couple of days. I watched every game that the Jag went back and rewatched every game that the Jaguars played, and and was very entertained by that game against San Francisco a few weeks ago there. And David and I talked about that game just recently, I think, on the other podcast on Wednesday there. But I put a GIF of that wheel route to the fullback up on my Twitter feed, and you know, had some misdirection there. Kind of looks like a split zone play, and the fullback just leaks right out around. No issues. But anyway, back to the game. I think the Jaguars absolutely going to have some turnovers. The Jaguars red zone defense is road red zone defense has been good. You could say, well, who have they played? Okay, that's part of the argument there, I suppose. But the fact of the matter is they are a tough defense even outside of their own red zone there. They're going to have to get Ben Roethlisberger or somebody to turn the field over and get some shorter fields, because Blake Bortles – if Blake Bortles only has to complete 8 passes in this game for the win, we need some serious questions going on. If he only attempts 14 passes in this game, something's gone horribly, horribly wrong once again. I just don't see it. Leonard Fournette has really not been the same back since, as I said, week 6 on. They're a team that's going to like to come out regardless with that heavy personnel and play that way. And I think, you know, that kind of plays into what the Steelers want them to do once again. I don't think the Steelers are going to make some of the mistakes that they made against the run in that first game. And it just comes down to what can the Steelers do offensively. And to be quite honest with you, with these linebackers kind of banged up the way they are, to talk about Telvin Smith, talking about Paul Poluszny, which I think both those guys are going to play, they're not going to be 100%. And even Blair Brown, the backup who saw action when Paul Poluszny left, I don't think he's going to dress. He went backwards on the injury report for them yesterday with an ankle. I think what you want to do if you're the Steelers is you want to run a lot of 21 personnel, a lot of 12 personnel, and some 22 personnel in this game. And I think you want to good old-fashioned, old-school power football, strap it up. We want to see if our guys up front are better than your guys up front. Kind of football here. And I think they're going to be able to do that. I think they're going to be able to run the football. I think they're going to get Jaguars in some unfortunate situations, personnel groupings where they can do something with Le'Veon Bell split out wide. And look, Antonio Brown, if you think you're going to shut him down or he's going to be a decoy, or I was asked on one radio show this week, you know, what about these reports of Antonio Brown being a decoy? Yeah, Antonio Brown ain't going to be no damn decoy. And I think you're going to have a situation where you're going to be able to get Juju Smith-Schuster the ball out in space as well, too. I just don't foresee a 5 turnover game happening. I think the Steelers win this. I think something's gone horribly wrong if the Jaguars even score 10 points in this game. So I'm going to call this one Steelers 24, Jaguars 9.
All right. Well, I think our point differential there, both of us by 15, Steelers by 15. So that would be easy on the cover. So Monday, Dave, it'll either be gnashing of teeth and recounting the terrible 2017 season, or Patriots Week. And that should be a joy unto itself.
Where would this rank? I mean, we talked a little bit.
Top three.
We're going to be some up. We're going to have some upset listeners. We're going to be some upset podcasters on Monday if they lose this game. Because to me, there's no reason for it to happen, in my opinion. One quick note, should Bruce Arians be the guy that replaces John Gruden on Monday Night Football? And how the heck would you like to see Bruce Arians take over the QB camps?
No. I don't think he's a nationally, you know, first of all, the part, not that it's necessarily a full-time job, but he wanted to get away from the game and he retired. I think if he wanted to be in the game, he would have kept doing what he's doing. So he'd be fun to see on the QB camps. I don't see it either of them happening.
Well, he was on with Rich Eisen this past week. He talked about wanting to get on the other side, of it.
Yeah, I did see him do a run with Colin Coward too. Talked about Ben and some other things.
Yeah, so he's making the rounds, keeping his name out there. Tony Romo set the bar this year, right?
Tony did a great job. Yeah, no doubt.
I think you need some. You need a little bit more color from your color guys, and Tony did that. And I think Bruce Arians would be a guy that could give you more color from a color guy. So I think he would be a name to, you know.
Well, you're saying you need more hardcore analysis. I mean, that's what Tony was doing. He was telling you what the quarterback's looking at.
Right. Coloring it more. Right. More analysis than just plain outright color. You know, the Dan Fouts and the Chris Collinsworths aren't enough. You know, in my opinion, now that Tony Romo's done what he's done. So I'd like to see a guy like Arians. And look, John Gruden, I thought, did a good job on Monday Night Football as well, too. I thank God the reports that Steve Young is not going to be the successor to Gruden there. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But, boy, you want to talk about more than anything. I would trade it all to make sure Arians does the QB camps, because – I think that would be absolutely fantastic, and that's taking nothing away from John Gruden and the job he did on those QB camps. I think that would be must-see TV if Arians, who, you know, let's face it, he's called the quarterback whisperer for a reason. I think that'd be fun to see him do those things. I think that's about got there. Here's the hoping that we're talking about a Steelers win on the Monday show. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Real quick, I put out there on Twitter as well, too, for people to ask us some questions. And come to find out, people ask us a lot of the things that we already talked about. From Carlos, he says, I was a bit young when Cowher was around, especially at the beginning. Were Yinzers so damn negative with him too, or is it a byproduct of social media? No, Carlos, they wanted the message boards, I remember way back then, they wanted Cowher fired every year too. So, no, that's just really any NFL fan base when it comes to that. Bobby Price asked a question on Twitter about Alualu for Tuitt if we can't go, but if Hargrave is also down. Bobby, it just so happens we just answered that earlier in the show, and looks like James Garman asked a question on Twitter along the lines of Tuitt and Alualu as well. We got to that. So, and then Richard Hudspeth on Twitter says he'd like to know some financial stuff about a Bell deal. Well, Richard, we ended up covering that as well, too. So, David, I think we did our job today. And you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. By the way, we were ahead of Golic and Wingo. Not that that means a whole hell of a lot on the Stitcher, but you know what? I'm going to milk that list as long as I possibly can. But in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button up right. Navigational bar, and here's to us hoping for a Steelers-Patriots AFC Championship game rematch.
Enjoy the weekend, as always. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.